Maybe half an hour late, but we're on live from the Canadiens Polo Park. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk. Drew will be back. Drew Mindell, of course, will be back next week. Jesse Pelche helping us out. We've overcome our technical difficulties, and we're quite excited about today's show. We're live on location, as I said, Canadiens Polo Park, Ezzy and Dave. We're going to have Dan O'Toole in person, the Riverton Rifle, Reggie Leach, possibly Andy Murray. We got Matt Lachlan coming on from New Jersey to talk about Ray Shiro's kind of surprise hiring with the Devils, which we'll talk about next segment. We're going to have Paul Edmonds, of course, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290. So jam-packed show, a little shorter than usual. Five guests. We're looking forward to it. But first, we don't have time for, you know, to chit-chat, Ezzy and Dave. Last night's games. Let's start with the Washington Capitals and New York Rangers. Looks like the Washington Capitals are going to be home free. They score a goal late in the third period. Curtis Glencross on a kind of quasi 2-on-0, his first playoff goal of his career. And with the 2 minutes left in the game, or under 2 minutes left in the game, the New York Rangers show that they won't go away, and they come back and win in overtime.
Well, Richie, we might actually have a series that goes to not maybe seven games, but we have a series that maybe will, well, there's going to be one series that goes to six games. But, you know, Richie, you mentioned that, you know, the Rangers got the big win there, and Ryan McDonagh, really nice play by Derek Stepan.
It was, yeah.
And really good for Ryan McDonagh, because I think Ryan McDonagh struggled quite a bit. But really, to me, the story was about the non-goal. And, you know, Joel Ward, who's been excellent this year in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and he's really been excellent in previous years in the playoffs. But to me, that was a goal, and really changed kind of the outlook of that game. You know, it was called goalie interference, and it was kind of suspect, the referees. But, you know, Richie, we don't want to spend too much time on the non-goals. This Rangers team, to me, up until this point in the series, really, the Rangers have been really beaten at their own game. This Washington Capitals team, yeah. as the playoffs have progressed, Dave, I just seem to be more and more impressed with the way they play. Braden Holtby's been excellent. Braden Holtby really had an underrated season, played more games than anybody during the regular season.
What 71. About those goals last night, though?
Well, that was his weakest game, and you could see that he was a little bit rattled. But to me, the New York Rangers at times haven't made it difficult enough mm-hmm. on Braden Holtby. You know, Rick Nash has had chances, and you know, Chris Kreider's been good, and Martin St. Louis has been kind of hot and cold, but
yeah.
Braden Holtby has really been the story of this series to me. And, you know, the Rangers, obviously, huge win. I mean, that was an exciting overtime goal.
Glenn Taylor almost got out of his chair.
He was chomping away on a cigar.
Yeah, he was chomping in that cigar, not smoking the cigar. He doesn't smoke
doesn't
it anymore.
Him. Just chomping.
But these teams are so evenly matched. I was telling you this last weekend, Richie. It's fascinating to me. You watch these two teams play, and there's no space out there.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's
hot. It's well, you know what? I haven't minded it, and you know, it's all about battles. It comes down to who makes a mistake. That's what it comes down to. These two teams are so good. The Capitals defensively have improved so much with the addition of Matt Niskanen and Brooks Orpik.
Sure.
Yeah, sure, Richie. You know, the Rangers, they haven't scored a lot of goals. So
I mean,
yeah, if you like goals, you're not going to like this series. But to me,
who doesn't like goals?
If you like good goaltending, you're going to like this series.
I like good goaltending and goals.
Yeah, hopefully you get both.
Yeah, and that's what you hope for. I see your point. I mean, they're playing hard. But I just see a New York Rangers team, Dave, that was able to score so many goals in the regular season and get into the playoffs. Turn on, if you're not watching the game, you check it on your phone or on the computer, 1-0.
Yeah, you're kind of surprised.
2-1.
It's almost like with the Montreal-Tampa series, right? Like, where did all the goals go?
Yeah.
And so you're sitting there thinking, when is it going to happen? This team has so much talent. And they're not getting it done. It was funny when they were pulling Lundqvist and he was heading to the bench with, I think it was like a minute 30 to go in the game.
Yep.
And then he saw them score and you saw him kind of peel away from the bench, kind of do the old raise. He's like, maybe I should get into the mix. But, you know, I mean, he's played really well. One player who's actually impressed me, though, is Nicholas Backstrom.
Oh, he's great.
And, no, I mean, I know he's a great, talented offensive player. And that was never, ever disputed. But what I've really been impressed by is his physicality. Because I'm watching him. He is finishing checks.
Yeah, ask
and,
Dan Boyle.
Yeah. And you know, that one is, you know, whatever. But, like, he has been hitting a lot of guys. And, it's not something I expected from his game. I mean, obviously, I haven't watched a lot of Washington this season.
Sure.
But we saw them when the Jets were in the Southeast Division. So, you know, we saw a lot of the Capitals. And I just never thought of him as an overly physical player. But in this series, at least, I've really seen him hitting, finishing his checks, and taking that kind of next step to try and separate guys from the puck. And, you know, what it shows you is, in my mind, is an overall commitment by the entire team to forcing the play on the Rangers.
We're live at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezzy, we talk about Nicholas Backstrom, and Dave, you probably could argue he's in the top 5 to 10, well, 10 for sure, centers in the league. Is he in the top 5? There are probably people who would make that argument. Is he one of the top wingers in the league, guy who scored a ton of goals this year, Rick Nash?
Well, again, and you know, he hasn't produced, but he's had his chances, and I thought he was had a pretty good game again yesterday. But again, you know, he's a goal scorer, and a lot has been made, Richie, about Matt Zuccarello. He played a lot with Matt Zuccarello during the regular season, but hey, Matt Zuccarello is not coming back this series. So he at the end of the day, he's got to finish, he's got to execute. You know, but I still think, you know, he's produced. He's still created offensively. You're seeing him still use his size, and especially around the net, he's hard to handle. But, you know, this Washington Capitals team, I think, was a bad matchup for the New York Rangers. I think they were a bad matchup for the New York Islanders. The way Holtby's playing, you know, he let in 2 goals yesterday. That was a bad game for Braden Holtby. And, you know, so, you know, you mentioned Rick Nash. He's a key player for them. But I think really, you know, back to what I was saying earlier, I think the Capitals, they've Barry Trotz, I think, has done an excellent job. You know, if you think about it, they've had a few injuries. What they've done is Marcus Johansson's moved down to the second line, and Joel Ward's moved up to the first line with Backstrom and Ovechkin, and they've spread out. Now Troy Brower's on the third line. You've got Jason Chimera there, the third line. Jay Beagle has been a revelation in these playoffs. Yeah. Great on the faceoffs. This team just outworks and out-hits whoever they play. It's really a different type of Washington Capitals team. The Capitals team that we're used to is a team that, you know, uses the power play to their advantage and usually beats you with their skill.
Burakovsky's really, been a revelation,
too. Great. Yeah, Burakovsky's been great. He was on the Erie Otters last year with Connor McDavid, and now he's
scored 2 big goals the other day.
He's producing for the Capitals. So it's a well-balanced team here, guys. I know Richie picked them to win the division, and I really was hesitant to pick them even as a playoff team, but I wouldn't be surprised if this team gave the next opponent that they face, whether that's the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Montreal
Canadiens. They still got to win this series.
They still got to win this series. I mean, the Rangers, you know, we talked about this last weekend, Rich. You know, we both thought that the series, I think, was going to go to 6 games. I think you took the Rangers.
I took the Rangers in 7, I think.
Yeah. I took the Caps in 6. You know, this Rangers team has done it. So there's no lack of experience when you talk about the New York Rangers. You're talking Marty St. Louis. You know, Rick Nash hasn't been through it as much, but he was through it last year.
Yeah.
So Henrik Lundqvist, you know that he's going to be solid for you in net. Ryan McDonough, Dan Girardi, these guys have tons of experience. They did it last year against Pittsburgh. So, yeah, you're right. The Capitals haven't won the series yet.
And they're going back to Washington, Dave, and that's going to be, you know, you're going back, you have your home game, and do you want to, it's similar to the Rangers last year, putting some doubt in the Pittsburgh Penguins' head, right? That's what happens. The talent to Crosby and Ovechkin and all that. You know, you take out the first game, guys, and you think about how that game ended. You referenced it earlier, Dave, Backstrom's hit on Boyle, or as he did. If that doesn't happen and Rangers win in overtime, we're 3-2 the other way. That shows you how important every, you know, every little event in a series is. Moving over to the other series that we saw last night, and we'll break down Chicago-Minnesota and how quickly that seemed to, well, not seemed to, like how quickly that series ended. Flames and Ducks last night. You know, the Flames, the game starts early. The Ducks get going early. It's 1-0. And the Flames, you're like, oh, you know, the Ducks are going to make a push here. You know, they're going to kind of take over. Boom, Flames come back. They're up 2-1. I mean, it's really amazing the way the Flames never give up. Anaheim eventually scores. They score an early goal in the third, Ezzy, and that eventually turns out to be the winner. Matt Beleski gets the winner. So, Anaheim Ducks, let me ask you this. Plainly, we talked about Washington, who they may play in the next round if they're fortunate enough to make it. Do you think Calgary has much of a shot at all of pushing this to 6 or 7 games?
Well, it's going back to Anaheim, where Anaheim has been excellent. They haven't lost a game yet in the playoffs, right? You mentioned Matt Beleski's game-winning goal. What happened there, Joe Colburn takes a double minor before the second period ends, and a high-sticking minor, and he ends up cutting Francois Beauchemin, and Matt Beleski's goal was a power play goal early in the third period there. To me, what happened yesterday was the Calgary Flames, you could see their lack of experience really showed through.
I agree.
They were trying to get on the nerves of the Anaheim Ducks, and you could tell that Bruce Boudreau told his players to stay out of the penalty box and know that because Calgary was down 2-1, and they knew that if they went back to Anaheim down 3-1, it was going to be very difficult. So they were a desperate team. Hey, give Calgary all types of credit. Kari Ramo was good at times, and unfortunately he didn't have a good finish to the game, but he comes in under tough circumstances, coming in for Jonas Hiller there in game 2. But hey, this Anaheim Ducks team, Rich, we saw this team against the Winnipeg Jets. We saw them sweep the Jets, and we've seen them quite a bit throughout the regular season as well. This is a good team, and if you give them these opportunities, even though their power play wasn't good during the regular season, yeah, it's been excellent during the playoffs. Matt Beleski, you mentioned guys like Matt Beleski, Kyle Palmieri, Jakob Silverberg, those secondary scorers. Those are the guys that, if Perry and Getzlaff aren't producing, those are the guys that are going to hurt you. Hey, look, Beleski was on pace for a 30-goal season. He's a good player. And, you know, right now, maybe with the exception of the Blackhawks, the Anaheim Ducks have the most depth of any team, I believe, that's left in the playoffs. So, I mean, good for the Flames for making this interesting. They've been a great story. But, I mean, yesterday, all the Ducks needed was that small window, that double minor early in the third period, double man advantage, a 4-minute man advantage, and they capitalized. And Frederik Andersen, I didn't even think that was that great. I think, you know, Michael Ferland, you know, great story, former Wheat Tank. Yep. That goal, he's got to have.
Got to have that goal. I totally agree. Goaltending. You mentioned goaltending. Frederik Andersen wins. He's 7-1 in the playoffs. He's going to be the starter. You know, who knows what happens next series if they do win and they play Chicago and how many goals will be in that series. And I think that'll be a saving grace for
the
National
Hockey
League.
I mean, Corey Crawford started to play a little bit better.
A little bit better.
But you don't know. I mean, he struggled in the first round.
I mean, hopefully there'll be a ton of goals in that series because the playoffs, in my opinion, have been really boring so far. And I think that would be certainly helpful for the league to get a little more exposure in terms of offense.
Yes.
But before we get to that, I don't think it's been announced yet, so I'm going to ask both of you. Calgary goes back to Anaheim, down 3-1. Do you go back to Jonas Hiller, Dave?
That's a tough one. You know what? I mean, he's got experience, so I mean, maybe you go back with Hiller. He hasn't been great, though. But neither one, as he said, they've both played average. Neither one's really stood on their head over a significant enough period of time to really say, okay, well, let's ride this guy or let's, you know. So, I mean, it's tough. Do you do it maybe for the, you know, just to give your team that shot in the arm mm-hmm. that they might need? Because that's the thing. Like, let's be realistic. It's playoff hockey. Sometimes a slight change, you know, just a little change like that, like a goaltender, can give your team that boost. But the problem is Calgary's already done it. So, I mean, like, are they going to get some sort of boost from it?
And, Dave, Kari Ramo, it's not like he's, you know, stolen games here. I mean, he's played well. But he didn't steal Game 3. I mean, the Calgary Flames, they came back because of a late goal from Johnny Gaudreau.
Right, yeah.
So it's not he hasn't played excellent. So I wouldn't be shocked if they go back to Jonas Hiller. I was a little bit surprised that they went to Kari Ramo with his lack of playoff experience and the fact that you're in the second round. But no, Rich, I think it's a good point. If you're going to make the move, you make it now when you're down 3-1. You can't flip-flop goalies 3 times in a series. You got to make the decision now, and there's no indication that they will go to him. But, again, what do you have to lose aside from the series?
Hiller wants to put the screws to the Ducks. He's angry about being let go by them, angry about the goalie rotation last year. You say, hey, we're down 3-1. We got nothing to lose. I would go to Hiller and say, if you want to prove him wrong, win the next
three. I don't even think it matters at this point. I think
you're probably right.
The Ducks are playing
so
well right
now. But
for
the Flames' mindset,
yeah,
change it up a bit.
Yeah. And that's if he ultimately makes that decision, that'll be why he does it. It's not because Hiller's played well, right, because he hasn't played well in the playoffs.
We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Habs-Bolts. We're going to talk about Wild Blackhawks. That series ending far earlier than most expected. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala on TSN 1290. We're back live at the Canadiens Polo Park. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary, Gala. And I've got to tell you guys, we're sitting here.
Something smells good.
Right in front. Yeah, that's fries, I think. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com, Jesse Peltier.
Dave, did you order those fries?
I wish. I'm starving.
Well, Ezzy, actually, I thought you were going to, you know, try and get a hold of the Avco Cup, which we're looking at, which is directly across from us. We have a... Is that an Andy Van Helleman jersey over there?
It is.
And Thomas Steen.
And we have a Thomas Steen jersey, and we have an Avco Cup. The Avco Cup. So, I mean, it's great scenery here, and we're waiting for everybody to come on down. Dinner starts at 7, but I assume people will be coming in through the doors around 5:30. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to have Reggie Leach on in person. Dan O'Toole, of course, formerly of TSN Sports Center, now Fox Sports 1. And Matt Laughlin's going to join us from WFAN shortly, next segment, to talk about the Ray Shiro hiring. Before we get into the Wild Hawks and the Habs and the Bolts, this segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All right, guys, if I would have told you that the Blackhawks would beat the Wild, you wouldn't have been shocked, although I thought the Wild would win the series in a close one. But if I had told you the Blackhawks would beat the Wild in 4 straight, you'd have thought I was joking, would you not have?
I think so, and You know, you look at this Minnesota Wild team, and again, what happens? You know, you have a situation where you're relying on essentially one line. I mean, I think the Minnesota Wild, why they were so successful against the St. Louis Blues is because they're not one-dimensional. They have multiple lines that can hurt you. And, you know, Nino Niederreiter was still good. Jason Zucker was still good. I thought Mikko Koivu was still good. Thomas Vanek, you signed him exactly for a series like this because you need him to score big goals. I thought the Chicago Blackhawks, and again, you know, these games weren't as lopsided as people think they were. You know, the first game, Chicago went up 3-0, and the Wild came back, tied it, and then, you know, Corey Crawford got the shutout there in game three. But, you know, the Minnesota Wild, where did their offense go? You talk about the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
You know, but they're used to that. They're used to Carey Price stealing games. It's almost like the Minnesota Wild got a little used to Devan Dubnyk stealing them games. And you can't do that. This Chicago Blackhawks team, I've told you this many times, Richie, before, throughout these playoffs. I think they're playing better than any team. I think the Chicago Blackhawks, they turn it up this time of year. They've won two cups in the last 5 years. You look up and down the roster, and then you throw in guys like Teuvo Teravainen, who
looks
a healthy scratch in the first round. You just throw them in. Yeah. Corey Crawford's starting to play a little bit better. He wasn't good in game one, and then game three got the shutout. He's starting to play better. So this Chicago Blackhawks team, I think the Minnesota Wild ran into really a monster in the second round. And I agree with you, Rich. I didn't think that they'd get swept. But you look at how Patrick Kane's playing right now, how Jonathan Toews is playing, Patrick Sharp, Hossa. I mean, Hossa's like the fifth best forward on this team. Many teams, he'd be the best forward.
He's a Hall of Famer, I think.
Absolutely. I don't even think it's a question.
Hall of Famer, yeah.
I think he goes in first ballot.
You should. Hossa's an unbelievable player. I mean, he's one of the toughest guys I've ever seen live with a puck. It's almost impossible to get him off the puck. It's unbelievable.
He's similar to Jaromir Jagr in the sense that he can, because of his size and his skill, he can take over shifts.
It's like Datsyuk that way, and he's better defensively than Jagr.
He is.
And not as good offensively. Jagr's one of the greatest of all time. But you talk about the depth on offense, and Patrick Kane's looking as good as I've ever seen him play.
So much for that 12 weeks.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, well, Dave, because this guy now has, I think it's
104 points.
104, sorry, career playoff points in, 102 games, whatever. He's a point-a-game player in the playoffs. And he just, all he does is get big goals. And he's evolved, too. He's not, he's still not, obviously, the defensive dynamo, Dave, that Jonathan Toews is. But he's become smarter. He doesn't take as many risks. But, I mean, this team can score with three lines. I love how Joel Quenneville, I think, is comfortable to move, especially, like, Christopher Stee got injured. So he moves Brian Bickle to the second line. He knows Bickle can get it done in the playoffs. Quenneville seems to know his team so well. And I love what he's done with the D pairings. Now, Michael Roosevelt's injured, but now they have some time. They got to figure out who's going to replace Michael Roosevelt.
I mean, that's a loss, Ezzy, quickly. I know you want to get in there, Dave, but quickly. Roosevelt's a loss. But you hear all season about how, you know, the bottom two on the team is really hurting them. They need some help on the bottom two. Roosevelt was part of that bottom two.
Not when you have Duncan Keith, though.
Well, right, but that's the thing. Roosevelt was part of that bottom two all year, and suddenly, oh, my God, the loss of Michael Roosevelt. How will the Hawks deal with it? Come on. I mean, it's their sixth. It's really their sixth defenseman on a team that has guys who can play 25 to 30. It's not as big of a... I realize bigger player, can block shots, it's tougher, all that. But this team is not going to lose in the next round because Roosevelt's not there. Dave, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, like, Pelayev Kane has been... He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, that third goal was so talented. I mean, because he literally, like, when they showed the replay and you could see the way he changed the angle as he was taking the shot to catch Dubnyk, you know, not expecting it, especially because his previous goal went top corner.
Right.
So, you know, he's got to be in the goalie's head at that point a little bit. And his play has been phenomenal. Toews had to be killing himself when he had the empty net and hit the post. You know how mad he was, especially because Minnesota gets a chance to take it down with 14 seconds to go and possibly tie the game. And they actually got a pretty good shot.
They did.
Won the faceoff. You know, they hadn't been winning faceoffs that game. But I actually thought Dubnyk is just, you know, the Seabrook goal... That wasn't a good one. The first one he let in, first shot of the game, I think, or something like that, whatever it was. It wasn't a good goal. The Shaw goal, I mean, not entirely his fault because the defenseman is on the puck, so he can't really see where the puck is, but he's, you know, his five holes wide open, and it gets past him. I just thought he was a little bit tired.
That's a storyline for me. Maybe it's tired. Maybe it's he's not as good. I don't think he was. He is as good as he was there for that stretch. But even in the St. Louis series, guys, I know those kind of games were all lopsided. Lots of them are lopsided. The shine kind of wore off a bit on Devan Dubnyk, and I think that was part of also why this team lost. I'm not blaming it all on him by any means,
no.
But lost in four. He was stealing lots of games for them earlier in the year. I don't think he stole many games in the playoffs.
No, I would agree with you. I think like he played well, but you know, especially look, we saw Chicago really be able to exploit it. And that's the key, right? Like when you have players like Taves and Hossa, Teravainen and Kane, the list goes on.
I know.
I mean, and the craziest part is like, you know, you saw them lose Roosevelt and you're thinking, okay, well that's bad. And let me tell you, watching that injury live, that was not good.
It wasn't a good one.
You know, you knew right away when he fell that was awkward, and then you saw the replay and ankles are not supposed to bend like that. Like I was, and you know, they're like, oh, that's going to be a lower body. Yeah, that was a lower body injury. But, you know, the craziest part is they're like, okay, well, you know, are they going to go to Thiemann and bring him up? And his minutes didn't really increase that significantly because they rely so heavily on Duncan Keith.
He's
and
an incredible
Seabrook.
Player.
And, but Seabrook had more minutes that game. In the third period.
He's been terrific, too.
Seabrook had more minutes in the third period than Keith did. So I know, and I know that they're both, the accolades they both get are unbelievable.
Seabrook was, in 2010, was on the Canadian Olympic team. So it's not like Brent Seabrook isn't an elite defenseman. He's fallen off a little bit. Sure, he might have lost a step a little bit. But, you know, you mentioned how they've played defensively. To me, the Chicago Blackhawks played, as a group, better defensively than maybe with the exception of one or two teams better. And, you know, you look at some of the big guys. We talked about it, Rich. To me, Zach Parise was their best forward in combined rounds.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable. I haven't seen Zach Parise play like that since 2012 when the Devils went to the finals against the LA Kings. But you look at Thomas Vanek had no points in the last three games.
What a shock.
Mikko Koivu
what a shock.
No
Thomas
points
Vanek
in the last three
when it
games.
Mattered.
You want me to go on? Parise had 1 point in the last three games. Pominville had 1 point in the last three games. And that was a late goal in the third period. So I can go up and down. I mean, their primary forwards, their superstars,
fair.
The big boys for the Minnesota Wild didn't get it done. I know Zach Parise had a couple points in the first game, but you know, after that, I mean, they really vanished, and especially Vanek. I mean, he's
Thomas Vanek.
This is like the Wild have a very skilled team. Mikael Granlund, like you go up and down the list. Nito Niederreiter's improved a lot you know, his first year with the Islanders when he was essentially they sent him to the AHL. Like, this is a skilled team. You look at the Chicago Blackhawks, they completely neutralize them. Like, you look at down the middle, and, you know, Taves really, against anybody, is probably going to dominate. But this Chicago Blackhawks team completely swept them aside, really.
I want to stay on this series. We'll push the Bolts and Habs. We're a little bit, you know, came on a little bit late, so we're going to move some things around. Bolts and Habs we'll talk about later. By the way, we're at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala at Canada Inns Polo Park, and you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guys, Izzy, I want to talk about a point you just mentioned. The defensive play of the Hawks. I love the way they play defense because instead of playing defense, getting the puck and hucking it off the boards, flipping it out of the zone, they play defense and their goal is to get the puck and make a play.
Mm-hmm.
And so many teams don't do that anymore. That's one of the reasons, in my opinion, goals are down. And a lot of these games are bordering on unwatchable. And the Hawks, Duncan Keith plays defense, gets the puck, and immediately thinks offense. He thinks offense from behind his hash marks. You wish more teams, and I realize it's a talent thing too, but you wish more teams would try to play that way.
Right, and part of that, guys, is because they have the players like Jonathan Taves, like Patrick Kane, right? But it also, Richie, is the style and strategy that you employ.
Yes.
It absolutely is. And you're right. I think you see time and time again, and it's different too in the playoffs, when you're trying to lock a game down, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about 5-on-5 throughout the course of the game, what you're trying to do. And yeah, it starts with the back end, and Duncan Keith usually plays half the game, and Nicholas Jarmolson, I think, is very underrated for how good of a defense. Nicholas Jarmolson on 29 other teams, maybe with the exception of the Kings with Doughty, is the number one defenseman. He really is. He's always been, you know, he's, I think, underrated because of the team he plays on. But you're right, the Chicago Blackhawks team, they get down a couple goals. They're not, you know, even if there's only 5 minutes left in the game, Richie, they're not afraid because they know that they can score. They know they've been in the situation many times before. They have so many skilled players. And I think, to me, they're the most exciting team to watch in the playoffs. They're the best team, I think, for what I've seen in the playoffs. And they weren't my choice to win the Stanley Cup. I think I picked them to go to the conference finals before the season started. But just based on
I actually picked him before the season started, but as soon as I picked the Wild this last series, I can't make that claim. But you, can we just go back quickly before the break to talk about your conference final prediction at the beginning of the season?
I could be 3 out of 4.
Well, tell the listeners
the one team had. The one team I was wrong on was the Islanders. Well, I think my pick to win the cup was the Lightning
over
the Ducks,
right?
But I picked the conference finalists. I had Tampa Bay, New York Islanders, Chicago, Anaheim. So I could be 3 of 4.
Wow.
But hey, I mean,
as we were in Vegas, how come you didn't bet on those?
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, the Islanders, you know, if you think about it, they're going to probably be replaced by the Capitals, who beat them. So
there you go.
But, you know, hey.
Karnak over here.
there's too much skill and experience rich on the Chicago Blackhawks. They just, to me, I think they're going to be really tough to beat.
I think it's better for the league that high-scoring teams and teams that want to create offense are succeeding, because then you're going to, otherwise you'd be seeing more 2-1 games, which is the last thing I think most fans want to see. We'll leave it at that. When we come back, Matt Lachlan of WFAN in New York covers, it's the play-by-play man for the New Jersey Devils. He's going to join us to talk about the hiring, the surprising hiring, of Ray Shiro as new general manager of the New Jersey Devils. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Top of the hour, 4 o'clock on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, Dave Minuk, and Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mandel is returning next week when he's back from Kentucky. We're live at Canadiens Polo Park for the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. And I got to tell you, it is pretty... some pretty cool stuff in here. Ezzy and I and Jesse and Dave were just talking about it off air. Jerseys and helmets and cakes and different... Ezzy's already got 3 cakes so far. So we're really looking forward to seeing everybody.
Was I not supposed to eat those?
Well, yeah, Ezzy's got some... the beard is kind of growing back, and there's a little bit of icing in there. So Matt Lachlan, of course, cannot see us, but he can hear us, and he's going to join us right now to talk about the New Jersey Devils hiring of Ray Shiro. Matt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
There, it sounds like it's a ball.
It is, well, technically a gala. I've been told the guy is not a dinner, it's a gala, and I've been getting in trouble, Matt. But we're having you on today. The New Jersey Devils going to make news, not in the playoffs, you know, not involved in the world champion, you know, not talking about the world championships, but the hiring, and a surprise hiring to many people, of Ray Shiro this week as general manager of the team. Were you surprised to hear that Shiro was hired, and hired at the time that he was?
I was surprised from this standpoint. I mean, Lou Lamoriello has been the man in charge since 1987. He came in as president in April of that year. By the start of the season, he was also the general manager. And there's been no one else. He's been the singular voice of the franchise since. With the team not being in the playoffs the last 3 years and for the last 5, he thought that there would be some changes, perhaps an assistant to Lou. He has never had a true assistant. He has someone to help him with cap issues, but that's it. But when we found out that there was a change, that he was only going to be the president and there was going to be a new general manager, I think it caught everyone by surprise. That it was Ray, not necessarily, because I think ownership had indicated that, you know, an outside voice would be interesting to at least have come in, again, because of doing business and successfully at that for so many years in one particular way. You do want maybe an outside voice, someone who had been in different organizations, but had won a Stanley Cup, because winning is what this ownership group is about, and it's in the Devils' DNA. So, yes, surprised to a degree, but no, thought that there would be at least something this offseason that would kind of change the way things had been run for so many years with the Devils.
Matt, you mentioned that Lou Lamoriello has led the Devils since 1987, and when people think of the New Jersey Devils, they really only know one man, and that's Lou Lamoriello and the Stanley Cups and all of that. For Lou Lamoriello to make this decision to step down as general manager and continue on as president of hockey operations, ultimately, why did he make the decision? Was it just time as far as he was concerned?
I think there are several factors, time being one of them. Today, the Devils co-owner, but the man who is the chairman and who is the board of governor representative, Josh Harris, addressed the media, and Lou followed. And both said that when they took over, when the new ownership group took over 2 years ago, this is a group that owns a lot of businesses. Josh Harris's company, a well-known Wall Street firm, owns 40 different companies. His co-owner, David Blitzer, his company runs maybe even more. So they have experience in running different companies and different businesses. And they talked to Lou at that point, they said, about, okay, where are we going down the road in terms of a succession plan? And so this conversation, I'm sure, has been taking place at times a little more intense than at others. But this apparently, this conversation has been taking place for a while. So Lou knew that there would be a day where he would want to, where the job, I want to say that it had outgrown him, but he is 73, and or will be 73 at his next birthday, and I think there are a combination of factors. So I think that, you know, knowing that the conversations had taken place, knowing that ownership wants to continue the Devils' winning ways. There was a guy out there who had a Stanley Cup on his resume. Lou still has a significant role as president. The need for a new voice, I think it probably all added up. I think surely if the Devils had been in the playoffs the last 3 years and were in the Eastern Conference Finals this year, perhaps that conversation wouldn't be taking place. But I think you add it all up, and everyone involved seemed to think that this was the time to turn the page and bring in a new leader.
Matt, you know, Lou's a pretty prideful guy, and obviously he's had a great, tremendous success with the Devils. You would have, if the decision was solely his, and you're kind of alluding to it, he probably wouldn't have wanted to go out on the note that he has or go out as general manager. So I want to kind of move over to the role that he's playing. We're seeing so many different structures. I mean, there are some resemblance, Toronto with a head of hockey operations, but Lou's not leaving completely. Of course, he'll still be there. Do you envision him still having a very significant role in the decision-making of the organization on the hockey operations aspect, or do you see him taking a step back and letting Ray Shiro make the final call?
It was made clear when the announcement was made earlier this week, and it was repeated again today, that Ray Shiro is 100% in charge of hockey operations. However, the structure is such that he reports to Lou and Lou reports to ownership. I don't want to misspeak and say that there'll be a triumvirate or a quartet of people making these decisions. I think there will be many voices in the room, but in the end, Ray Shiro's voice will carry the most weight. He respects what Lou has accomplished. They have worked the same job, but in competing divisions, obviously Pittsburgh and the Devils, a long history of competing against each other. So they know each other well. Freddie Shiro, Ray's dad, was the first radio analyst at the Devils, so The relationship with the team goes back a long way. But I think that Ray knows what he wants to do. I think he's learned in Pittsburgh, obviously, as a GM, but also as an assistant in Nashville and Ottawa, comes in with new ideas. I think if he is committed to a move, that move will be made. But I think as he debates it or looks at the pros and cons, I think he will lean on some counsel of Lou Lamoriello. And I don't think ownership will meddle at all, but, of course, they're going to sign the paycheck, so when it comes to certain things, they're going to be in the mix, too. But I think this is Ray's ship to steer, no doubt.
Matt Lachman joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the play-by-play man of the New Jersey Devils on WFAN in New York and New Jersey. We are live from the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala, and, it's funny, it's such a small world, hockey. Matt comes on, talks about Ray Shiro's father, Fred Shiro, the late Fred Shiro. And, of course, later on today, we're going to have Reggie Leach, one of Fred Shiro's big-time players from the 70s, of course, leading to cups, going to join us in person. So it is a small world.
Yeah, Richie, the Riverton Rifle, of course. Matt, the New Jersey Devils don't have a head coach right now.
Yep.
Lou Lamoriello was behind the bench with Scott Stevens and Adam Oates. For you, is that Ray Shiro's first move to hire a head coach?
Yeah, it will be. Josh Harris today said that there are candidates inside and outside that will be looked at. So my guess is Stevens and Adam Oates will be given due consideration. There are many other guys out there, though, who would love to be the head coach of the New Jersey Devils with a new GM and more than just some pieces in place, solid goaltending, good defense, a need to upgrade the offense. So there'll be many names bandied about. Without his name being spoken directly, Mike Babcock's name came up, and Josh Harris indicated that money is not going to be an object, and that he actually thinks that in hockey, not enough resources in that area are devoted to management, that you have a $70 million payroll and not as much is paid attention to what you're paying some of your management types and coaching. So the Devils, if Mike Babcock was interested, I think would be players. I don't know if that's the direction he would want to go. But I think the Devils, again, it's a new day for the Devils. So I think everything is on the table and all possibilities are there. I think a lot of roads will lead toward Dan Bylsma, but whether that's the way it winds up, I don't know.
It's interesting you mentioned Dan Bylsma. A lot of people have pointed to Dan Bylsma being a possible candidate, Matt, because to me, I want to get your opinion on this. It seems like Ray Shiro, has been selected by Lou Lamoriello, but they do have a lot of similarities in terms of the way they manage an organization. You know, Chiro placing is pretty close to the vest. Everybody knows that, you know, you never get any leaks from Lou Lamoriello. Chiro plays close to the vest, is very loyal to his staff and his players, and it seems like Lou Lamoriello's kind of picked a guy that he thinks resembles himself.
Well, in some ways, he may very well have, and a man who is one. I think mm-hmm. that they've known each other a long time, and I think Lou liked a lot of the things that Ray was able to accomplish in Pittsburgh and the way he did business. Interestingly, Josh Harris said as these conversations went on about succession, and Lou approached him, and I forget the timeline. In fact, it might not have been mentioned, but at one point Lou did say to Josh and to David, hey, we need to consider this succession plan that we've talked about. It might be time to put it into place. And so Lou went about his business of coming up with a list of potential replacements, and then ownership did their due diligence. And it turns out when they got together, Ray Shearer was at the top of ownership's list too. So he's well thought of. There will be differences. There's no question about it, just simply because it's a new man in charge. But I think the dedication to winning, the ultimate goal, is there. And I think interesting is the word that's been used most often this week around the New Jersey Devils, just because no one really knows how this change is going to work. And, you know, Ray is the man in charge, but does he change things completely? Is it now wide open? Are assistant coaches allowed to talk? Lou always believed right. in one voice. In fact, today he did speak after Josh Harris did, and he was asked, are we going to not hear from you a lot? He goes, I hope not. He goes, I'm only doing this because I was asked. He goes, but really, I've always believed in one voice. That voice should be Ray Shearer's. Now, Ray may have a slightly different point of view, and he may say, no, you've got a question, you can ask the assistant general manager, if they have one, because I trust that we're all on the same page. We don't know. We just don't know how this is all going to play out. Ray's only been on board for a few days, and now he's over at the World Championships. So we'll get a little better feel, you know, in the weeks to come. But yes, the head coach is clearly the priority. Free agency will be a part of the plan, perhaps trading the sixth pick overall. I think everything is a possibility.
You know, Matt, you mentioned the sixth pick coming up at the draft at the end of June for the New Jersey Devils. And in addition to having to announce who the head coach is going to be, you look at this New Jersey Devils team who mm-hmm. clearly needs some help, and they need to bring in some new bodies. Do you think the New Jersey Devils are going to be a big player in the free agent market? And if so, what do you think is the biggest need that they have to address?
It's offense followed by offense followed by offense. they have Corey Schneider in place. They signed him last summer to an extension. He's their guy. He has played very well for the last 2 years in a devil sweater. I think they're more than confident that he can carry the load moving forward. Obviously, the faith they showed in him by signing to the extension would support that. The defense is young. They have a veteran in Andy Green, who is the leader of that core, but they have a lot of young guys in their early 20s. They got a lot of experience this year. There are some guys in the pipeline on defense, so I think they feel solid there. But the Devils' inability to score goals doomed them this year. And so the focus will be on offense, and that will have to come in the form of younger players with some more speed. The Devils are old this year, the oldest team mm-hmm. in the league, and mm-hmm. this is a league that, if not, is served by youth, is served by speed, and they often come hand in hand. So that's what you'll look for the Devils to do. It'll be offense, offense, offense. I don't know that there's a lot of answers in free agency. I think there might be more of help in a trade. I think that draft pick might be used to spring someone loose. I think depending on where the salary cap winds up, there'll be some teams that'll be squeezed and someone might pop free. So I think the Devils are going to try to be opportunistic. And, you know, if there's a right free agent out there, I think certainly there'll be a player, but it's not a real top end free agent market. And I think the Devils don't want to make a short term decision that long term hamstrings them. There's some pressure to get into the playoffs, but Josh Harris emphasized this is a long term process. Yes, the short term view has to be taken into play, but he does not want to have a team that just makes the playoffs one and done. He wants to be deep in the playoffs on a regular basis. Challenge for Stanley Cup championships, continue the legacy that Lou had. So he made that perfectly clear. And if there's another bump or two in the road before that happens, that's fine. So I think Ray will take a long-term view.
Before asking the final question, Matt, we should note, of course, we're at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. Manitoba native Jordan Tutu signed today with the New Jersey Devils for on a one-year deal, and he tweeted out looking forward to putting the New Jersey Devils jersey on yet again. So that's exciting, obviously, for him and his family. But final question, you've mentioned Josh Harris, and rightfully so. He had a press conference today, but you've mentioned the ownership a lot throughout this interview. It's surprising because, to my recollection, the Devils' ownership has hardly ever been heard of. It's always been kind of Lou Lamoriello is speaking on the ownership's behalf, whether it be John McMullen before or whoever, maybe right after that. I'm forgetting the name of the fellow who followed him. But is this a kind of a new way of doing business in New Jersey, and it's kind of all being reflected in this move?
No, I think, well, first off, yes, there is a new way because there is a new voice. I keep using that term, a new voice, but there's, mm-hmm. you know, for the first time in 30 years, there's someone else in charge of the hockey operations. And so, yes, there is a newness to that. But Josh and David made it clear when they bought the team, and they've done the same thing with their ownership situation in Philadelphia and the National Basketball Association. They own the Philadelphia 76ers. They would like to speak at the beginning of the season and speak at the end of the season. And in between, just come to games and support the staff they have in place. I think so. Neither spoke when the season ended. Perhaps they knew that this move was coming, and they wanted to see it come to fruition before they spoke and then had to speak again. So I think we mention it only because it is newsworthy, because ownership is wants to reassure Devils fans that no, they're not happy, but they do have pieces in place and they have a plan in place. They respect what Lou has done. He has a major role, but this is a change. But at the same time, moving forward, the goals remain the same. So, no, I think this is just part of the annual plan that they will have, kind of a post-year recap. But because of all that's taken place, I think that his voice, ownership's voice, carries a little bit more today than normal.
Matt Laughlin, WFAN, New Jersey Devils play-by-play voice. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That was a pleasure. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the gala today.
Thanks very much. Enjoy your summer, Matt.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
That was great. Really good insight into what's happening in New Jersey. We're at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala, as Matt just alluded to. When we come back, voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290, Mr. Paul Edmonds will join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
I think a lot of it is who you play, the type of series it is. You look...
Polo Park from the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, Jesse Pelletier here, and I'm Richard Pollock, filling in for Drew Mindell, who will join us next week. You know, Ezzy, actually, I picked you up today on the side of the boulevard because today was, you know, leave any toy out or any product.
Get rid of your junk.
Get rid of your junk.
And nobody picked me up until you had to pick me up for the show.
Yeah, it was amazing. And there was a 20-minute train I had to wait for. So nobody was picking up Paul Edmonds, of course, because he was sitting in his house. He's nothing. Nothing like junk. He's one of the best play-by-play voices in the National Hockey League. Oh, go ahead.
Paul was coaching baseball.
Was he?
I have a texting relationship with Paul. That's why I know that.
Were you watching this on Periscope or what?
No, Paul told me yesterday, you know. Richie, you're not the only friend of Paul Edmonds.
Well,
I know you've done a little color, but...
Oh, apparently not. Bring some color to this broadcast, Ezzy. Paul, thanks for joining us.
No problem. And yes, Ezzy was right. I was coaching baseball. We just had a practice from 2 to 4 today. Picked up our first win in a freezing cold night last night, but now we move along and looking forward to the festivities tonight, guys. And you guys are already there, so hopefully you're warming everything up for us.
Something like that, you know. But Paul, you know, thanks for joining us today. And of course, we want to go talk about many things, the playoffs, the Jets, of course. But, you know, first we're at the Hockey Manitoba Gala, as we just mentioned, and you being the voice of the Winnipeg Jets and finishing your first full season on 1290. Can you give us a little recap of how that season went for you?
Well, it's definitely a transition. I mean, I've been asked that question numerous times with associates or friends or even family members, and I had a great time. I mean, you know, just a thrill to be able to, and a privilege to be able to do what you wanted to do since you were a fairly young boy, and then kind of channeled everything after that when it came to, you know, the education choices that I made and which direction I wanted to go. And then, of course, it's nice to sort of feel like you've been rewarded for all the time that you've spent in other cities, other provinces, and from my perspective, other countries as well, to try to apply your trade and get better. So from that standpoint, it was great. Certainly understandable, a little bit more pressure that I think that is provided on you for delivering every night, whether that comes from outside sources or from yourself. You certainly feel that and want to rise to the occasion on every night. I mean, every night, 82 nights a year, you have to be on your game. And I think we expect that of the athletes that play. So why not those that are around in sort of supporting roles or other aspects to the game? So wasn't anything that I didn't expect, but it certainly was a great experience. And I will say this, I found the first couple of months, everything was coming at me at about 150 miles an hour. And I thought somewhere in around Christmas time, around the holidays, guys, that things had slowed down. And then you get a real good chance to really absorb where you are and feel like you belong and then just kind of move forward for the reasons why people wanted to hire you.
Paul, we'll get to the Hockey Manitoba 100th anniversary dinner and some of your memories over the years. But, you know, just sticking with the Jets here for a second, you know, look at that series against the Anaheim Ducks. Last night they went up 3-1 against the Calgary Flames, but, you know, the Jets still played well in that series despite being swept. So I think you would probably agree that this season was still an ultimate success. And really, when it comes down to the Anaheim Ducks and the way that they defeated the Winnipeg Jets, it was really probably more so just the lack of playoff experience. It wasn't because the Winnipeg Jets didn't deserve to be there or they don't have a good team.
Ezzy, I would agree with that. I think that you can take away, and I know it was a four-game series sweep, but you can take away for the Winnipeg Jets a lot of experience and a lot of foundation building when it comes to moving forward. And how invaluable it's going to be for a guy like Mark Scheifele looking 2 or 3 years down the road on what he had to do and face off against Getzlaff and Kessler and same with Lowry, and how invaluable it's going to be for those guys in their experience. I mean, now they've got 4 games of NHL playoff experience behind them, 4 more games than they had. Even for a guy like Brian Little, 26, 27 years old, had never had a playoff game before in the Atlanta Winnipeg franchise. So very important for him. And, you know, listen, they played every single game tough against the Ducks. They gave the Ducks a real good rattle. I don't think anybody can be ashamed of the way the Winnipeg Jets presented themselves and played. I mean, they lost in overtime. They lost close games. The Ducks had this propensity for coming back as they did last night against Calgary. So I think all in all, the Winnipeg Jets took a lot of steps this year to getting into the postseason. The way they played, let's not forget, the number one seed in the Western Conference. There's a reason why the Anaheim Ducks were the number one seed in the Western Conference. They were the best team out west, and they proved it, and they're proving it against Calgary as well. We didn't seem to have much answer when they decided to shift it into another gear, the Ducks, last night in a goal in the second period and then a couple, including an empty netter in that third last night. So I think that the next step for the Jets is to certainly feel that they took strides this year, which they did, but then you really don't want to be a wild card team. If you can, you try to avoid that number one seed so that you can better your opportunities to get out of the first round, like Calgary did this year. In a bit of a weaker division when you get past the Ducks in the Pacific. So great strides for the Winnipeg Jets. A lot of good things came of this year, and I think that a lot of people are just stepping back, guys, and saying, okay, take another step next year.
We're joined by Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, here on TSN 1290, and we're live from Canadiens Polo Park at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. Paul, you know, we talk about the Jets. Of course, you're doing play-by-play for the Jets. Everybody knows that, but before you did that and before, you know, between or during even your time calling games for the Winnipeg Goldeyes for so many years, as so many people know you from, you called games for the Selkirk Steelers. Then we're at the Hockey Manitoba Gala. So talk about that experience and the experience of calling games at different levels and how that led you to where you are and how other people are in those positions.
Well, this is kind of interesting because I think anybody that really follows the game and gets out to maybe a Junior A game or to an NHL game or watches the Western League, if they have the opportunity to go out to Brandon or even, you know, head down south and watch an NCAA game in Grand Forks, you're always going to be seen as you move up in levels of hockey, players that are bigger, faster, stronger. We've heard that numerous times. But the interesting part about calling a game in a Junior A building versus an NHL building is the fact that the game is faster, certainly at the NHL level. But because you're playing in such large venues at the NHL level, usually when you're doing play-by-play, you are higher up. So the higher up you get, the game slows down a little bit more, okay? Whereas in Junior A buildings, you are not very high up, removed from the stands, and sometimes you are in the stands, so the game is just that much quicker because you are so low. So very interesting, because I always felt that depending on what the vantage point was calling the game, there are similarities to the speed of the game when you are calling the game on radio or television, depending on where you are sitting and what your vantage point is.
So, Paul, a Manitoba team hasn't won the Junior A Hockey Championship in 41 years, but the Portage Terriers have a chance to break that streak when they're hosting at the RBC Cup in, I think it's coming up this week. So what do you think that fans can expect from this tournament?
Well, I've had the opportunity to cover a lot of Junior A hockey, as you guys have mentioned, and I also had in my career would be top five. I covered a Memorial Cup in Sault Ste. Marie when I was covering the Swift Current Broncos back in the early 90s. And, you know, these kinds of tournaments are very, very unique, because it's the best of the best. And one time I think I heard it was coined the best, and that's not where champions are made, but where champions go in a lot of respects for these tournaments. So, you know, David, you were talking about the fact it's been 41 years. It was interesting, too, because the caveat to that is that it was back-to-back Manitoba champions in the Centennial Cup back then. It was Selkirk in 73, and then 74 was Portage. That was the last time that a Manitoba representative has won the Centennial slash now RBC Cup. So it's been a long, long time. Very good hockey. Champions go there, and then ultimately of those champions from the regions, you select a national winner. From what I've seen of Portage this year and what I know of Blake Spiller and Paul Harland, they've assembled just a crack team in Portage, a team that wasn't just built to win an MJHL championship and slide through the playoffs undefeated, but win a national title. You're going to see a lot of good hockey, a lot of guys that are playing certainly to win a national championship, but are playing for jobs maybe at the NCAA Division I level. And you're going to see guys that probably at this level right now, with the teams that are involved, that might have a chance to eventually become an NHLer. So there's a lot of hockey future for a lot of these players that are involved in a tournament like this. And if you have the opportunity to go, you'll go, as there was a game today, actually a couple games today, and Portage was playing Penticton to kind of kick it all off. You'll grab some tournament fever, and you'll be wanting to go there the whole week in Portage. But it'll be a great opportunity to showcase Junior A hockey in this province, just an hour west of Winnipeg. I know Portage has done a real good job leading up to it, and certainly the more noise that the Terriers make, the more noise that will come out of the Central Plains area for them to get to the weekend final next weekend. So a great opportunity for a lot of people, and a great opportunity for people that really want to enjoy some high-end hockey at the junior level.
Paul, the Hockey Manitoba 100th anniversary dinner is coming up here in a couple of hours.
You're actually already eating dinner right now.
I am. I started to snack a little bit here. But, Paul, you know, I'm sure that you're excited to see a lot of people here. Richard Pollock's probably number one on that list. But when you think about the names that are going to be here, Mike Keane, Reggie Leach, Ab McDonald, Kerry Wilson, the names go on and on. Who are some of the characters that you're most excited to talk with tonight?
Well, you know, I guess we'll see who's there. But I think it's going to be a bit of a hockey who's who. And I think what it's going to tell us, guys, is the deep roots that we have in the game. For one of the smallest provinces in the union here, you know, I mean, you know, we don't have a great population. We're kind of in the middle of nowhere. But yet we've been able to produce some of the best hockey players that our country has seen, that we have seen internationally. And I think that will be on display here tonight as well. And, you know, it'll be a gala dinner, and it's a formal affair, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't really know who I'm going to be excited in bumping into or glad Henning. Certainly all the names that you mentioned leading up, Ezzy. But at the same time, I think there's going to be a lot of guys that you run into that you didn't realize that you were going to see there, and maybe even some budding hockey players, some guys that are still waiting the arrival of the NHL draft this year, or guys that are playing, and maybe some Jets that are there. So I just think it's going to be a real special night for hockey to commemorate, you know, the century anniversary on it. I was had the opportunity to golf in the golf tournament last year to kind of kick off all of the celebrations for Hockey Manitoba and the 100th anniversary. So that was a lot of fun. And then I know that from the grassroots level, my youngest guy had an opportunity to play in a special game with a Hockey Manitoba 100th anniversary jersey this year, which he still has at home. So that's kind of a secret in our home as well, just to be part of that from that standpoint where, you know, I grew up here. I played my minor hockey here, and I've cut my teeth certainly with my career here, and now I make hockey full-time as my career and my livelihood, you know, in the province that gave me the opportunity. So, you know, I'll be thankful for that, and certainly if I run into anybody that that I knew from back in my youth that might be there tonight, I'll be sure to thank them. But I just think it's going to be a grand night for the game in our city and province this evening.
Can't say any better than that. Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you a little bit later tonight at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala.
My pleasure, gentlemen, and I will buy you a drink when you're off the air.
Sounds like a plan, Paul. When we come back, Mike Babcock, Tom McClellan, a lot of talk about coaches here. Where are they going to go? What's going to happen? We're going to discuss it live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Smashing Pumpkins here. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, Jesse Pelche on site, Richard Pollock, Drew Mandel will be back next week. We're here live at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. Starting to get a little bit busier here at Canad Inns Polo Park. And we're pretty excited for tonight's events. I mean, it's going to be a who's who, as Ezzy mentioned last segment when we talked to Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290. So we're looking forward to it. Before we talk about Mike Babcock, who's looking forward to exploring his options, this segment's brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, the official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. As you smile at me, Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Yeah, Richie, I might have a little bit of a space between my teeth, but my teeth are, I always brush my teeth. Always make sure I floss.
Well, it's easier to floss if there's a space between them.
Yeah, that's true. Those two teeth, those front teeth, little space. I should have worn my retainer when I was younger. I had braces, but I didn't wear the retainer, and then that space opened up. Anyways,
After these comments, you might need to put down a retainer.
Dave knows what I'm talking about. Looking good here. Wearing my best tie.
You're wearing a suit, an orange jumpsuit. Mike Babcock, you know, he could be wearing orange, the Philadelphia Flyer orange. Tom McClellan, those are the two hottest names. Of course, they used to coach together in Detroit, and I want to talk about that now, guys, and some people are sick of it. I find it intriguing. I personally have the belief that coaching has never been more important, and I think somewhat to a detriment of the quality of play of the game because the game's overcoached. But I think if you look at a lot of these rosters, they're very similar now, right? You're in a cap system. There's very similar talent levels, and I think coaching is playing a big part. You know, you watch Mike Babcock and the Red Wings push the Lightning to 7 games there. Some would say on paper the Lightning were a lot better, but I'd probably argue that. But the point is, coaching, I think, is very important. So now Mike Babcock, who sat around for a year not signing with the Red Wings, it seemed like a kind of a red flag to me. He gets a couple offers throughout the course of the year, and now the Detroit Red Wings have granted him permission to speak to other teams for a period of time, and if, of course, he decides to go to another team, they're going to be compensated. They've set it at a third-round pick. So a couple questions. The first one I want to ask you is, do the events of this week change your perspective on how things are? Did you think before that he was going to stay with the Red Wings and now you're hesitating? Or do you think this is just him exploring his options like he always planned to do?
Well, it's a good question, Richie. And to me, the chances of Mike Babcock returning to Detroit have always really been 50-50. I was never certain that he wasn't considering coming back to Detroit. You know, Richie mentioned that he hasn't signed the contract extension. Mm-hmm. Absolutely a red flag. I don't think you can deny that. But I think he also wants to see what else is out there. We should mention Mike Babcock and Ken Hollander at the World Championships right now in Czech Republic. And you know, he's talking to other teams, but his contract doesn't expire until the end of June. Mm-hmm. Which means that if he does sign with another team, I believe it's a third-round pick that the team has to, you know, I did my little research here, Richie.
I just said that, though.
You did? Okay. I didn't hear.
That's my second.
Okay. I wasn't sure that you mentioned that. I was listening to everything you were saying, but
he was listening. He wasn't active.
I was getting a little distracted. You know, I smell good food and all that, but Mike Babcock right now, I think, Rich, it's absolutely fascinating. He's the biggest free agent. He's a bigger free agent than any other. I mean, with
all due respect
to Mike Green, Matt Bolesky, some of the bigger UFAs coming up here. I mean, Mike Babcock, you're talking about, we've talked about this before, to me, maybe the second greatest coach of all time after Scotty Bowman. Hmm. I mean, his record speaks for itself, Rich. It really does. The Olympics, the Stanley Cups, all that.
Stanley Cup
has gone to the finals.
Yeah, three times.
But you're talking about a guy that, I mean, why wouldn't you pay this guy $4 or $5 million a year if you're the Edmonton Oilers, if you're the Philly Flyers, if you're the New Jersey Devils? I mean, to me, I think it's not just me. I think we're all going to be watching to see where Mike Babcock goes. And, you know, you hear that he's already interviewing with teams, and you hear Todd McClellan is already interviewing with teams. I think those two coaches right now are number one and two. There's other good coaching candidates. We talked to Matt Lachlan about Dan Bylsma.
Sure.
Peter DeBoer apparently is interviewing as well. So, I mean, you hear about these guys, but Mike Babcock, to me, he offers something different. And I think that he's shown not only at the NHL level, Rich, and before that, the WHL level, but he's shown at the Olympic level, it's not easy. And, you know, to your point, Rich, I think it's a good point that you bring up, and you've brought it up before to me about coaching. Coaching's obviously always been important, but now with all the parity in the NHL and the fact that these games come down to one mistake, if you put the wrong guy out for the faceoff, or if you don't know who's on the other team and who's out there, and you don't adapt to the situation, you can easily lose a hockey game. And he has shown time and time again that he can do that.
And I think, you know, that you speak about the Olympics and the way he coaches the Olympic team. It might not have been as exciting, although we're also invested in it, the Canadian Olympic performance. But he had a roster that was fast and could take away space. And was there any space for any team that they played in the Olympics? He was able to affect that plan so well. So, Dave, I have a two-part question for you. The first part is, do you think his availability is overblown based on maybe what you think is the effect coaches have on a roster as compared to players? And the second part of the question is, do you think third-round pick is too much, is fair compensation, or is a bargain?
You know what? I mean, he's an excellent coach. There's no question about it. So, I mean, he's definitely had a lot of impact on what the Wings have been able to do. I mean, there's no question that talent plays a big role, right? I mean, if you put Mike Babcock on the Buffalo Sabres with the roster they have, is Mike Babcock getting the Buffalo Sabres or, you know, another bottom feeder team?
I don't think Vince Lombardi is getting the Buffalo Sabres into the playoffs.
So that's the point. So, you know, what is the impact you're going to have on getting a guy like Mike Babcock to coach your team? Now, when you're talking about a team like the Edmonton Oilers, where he could go in there, I mean, look, when they got Connor McDavid,
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, that made the Oilers. The Oilers have deep pockets, and they have the ability to pay. So they're going to pay if they want, and they're going to have the draft picks. They're going to have guys that he's going to be able to coach for years. This is not, you know, a short-term project. And let's be realistic. The Red Wings, and I love the Red Wings. You know, I spent 3 years in Michigan, so, I mean, I've watched them closely. But they're an aging team. And, you know, every year we expect them to fall off. They lost Lidstrom. You know, Zetterberg and Datsyuk are getting older. So their core group is getting older. He's now having the opportunity to kind of reinvent himself with a younger team that's on the upswing. So, I mean, I don't think it is overblown too significantly. But I think that in certain instances, like I said, if you were going to say, if I was going to take Mike Babcock, if I was Terry Pegula, would I pay him to come coach the Buffalo Sabres? Well, they're getting Eichel. But no, I don't know that I would. You know what I mean? So I think in that instance, you know, getting a coach like Babcock might be a little bit unnecessary. You know what I mean? But, again, like I said, if you're an Edmonton Oiler, if you're a team that you think you can really be, you're on the upswing, you're going to have a chance to do it, then I think that there's, well, it's worth it. Especially, let's be realistic, these teams make so much money anyways.
I mean,
that you're going to tell me that if Mike Babcock is going to cost you $1 million or $3 million.
Probably more, $5 million.
No. I meant more than what you're going to pay somebody else. Well, hold on a second. I mean, come on, let's be realistic. These teams can afford, most teams can afford that. And if you think that he's the guy, then that's what you're paying.
Third round pick's fair?
And I was going to answer your second question. Yeah, I think a third round pick is fair. I mean, that's a high price to pay, but it's not like you're just negotiating with them to get the opportunity.
Right,
you're
going
to get him, and he's going to be your guy. And again, if you're prepared to make that investment in him, the $5 million, whatever, a third round pick, especially, like, look, let's be realistic. You don't want to give up picks, especially in a draft like this one, which everyone's talked about for years, is going to be so deep. But at the same time, like a team like the Oilers, who's already so deep with their picks.
Good point.
They can afford it.
If you talk to people in the game will tell you that Mike Babcock is seeing, you know, putting the pressure upon himself, probably more so than anybody else putting it on him, to try and set a mark, change the game for coaching salaries. And so while certainly the situation will have to be important, he's not going to go to San Jose, you know, a team going descending and needing to rebuild soon, and going to take $10 million. Like, I think he's going to make a lot of money, and I think he's going to try and set a new standard for coaches, but also want to win. And this is not just about, he's not going to go somewhere and take $2 million and take a bargain. He wants to, from what I've heard, he wants to change the game. So when we're talking coaches, we're talking coaches, you know, for $4 or $5 million. Because right now, the highest earning coach right now, I think, is what? We see three and a half. So I think he's going to make five. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with that.
And Rich, he deserves it.
I agree, deserves it. I totally agree with both of your points. And your points being that if you have money you can spend outside the cap, why not spend it? These guys make so much money.
They're not even showing you their books. And to your point, Rich, I mean, he's won the one Stanley Cup, but the decision Mike Babcock is going to make, the ultimate decision he makes where he is going to go, is going to be a long-term one. So that, yes. Dave saw the Red Wings a lot when he was living in Michigan. And even though the Red Wings were competitive, hey, the Red Wings could have gone to the second round. I think when you look at Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg, they probably have, I think we'd all agree, maybe 2 or 3 years left of good hockey. But hey, Jaromir Jagr's playing at 43. But yeah. I think it's safe to say that.
He kind of mentioned that in his last press conference.
Right. They don't have as much of, I think, talent and a future promise of, say, an Edmonton Oilers, Dave. And I think that's probably number one on Mike Babcock's list. If it isn't Philly, I think there's a lot of options for him.
If you can coach Connor McDavid, it's a slam dunk choice. They're going to pay you.
Especially given
Chiarelli and Nicholson are there
now. And Chiarelli and Nicholson and Babcock have a lot of experience together
with
Hockey
Canada.
And he's
a Western Canadian guy.
They're very familiar with each other with Hockey Canada.
I think Edmonton's where he's going.
I think Edmonton, too. That would be my, if I had to get, I think he either stays in Detroit because of the familiarity.
Exactly.
Or he goes to
Saskatoon, Edmonton. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump.
It is a hop, skip. Do you know what highway? I don't know what highway it is, but it's not going to that train wreck in Toronto.
I think it's Yellowhead, isn't it?
Yeah, it might be. Isn't that up to Saskatoon?
I don't know.
You might be right, actually.
I think it's Yellowhead.
You know, we'll leave the navigation. We have GPSs now on phones.
We did do a geography major, so that's fine.
That is true. We'll leave it to Dave. When we come back, I want to talk about McClellan. We didn't even get to him. He's coaching the World Championships, and everybody seems to
love Saskatchewan boy.
Everybody seems to love Todd McClellan, but is McClellan's decision going to be based on where Babcock goes because Babcock's going to set the market? We're going to discuss that and more after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live at Canada Inns Polo Park from the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala on TSN 1290.